Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. I'm pumped to be back here today doing some more recordings, providing some more information for you here on the podcast. Really excited to be going again. And more importantly, we are streaming this over onto YouTube as well. So you can not only just listen to this on your favorite audio podcast, but you can also find it over on YouTube. In other news as well, before we get going into this episode, if you were not aware, my YouTube has finally actually hit that quote unquote monetization phase, which is awesome. Something I've been working for approximately the past year, year and a half, if you know me personally, and it's been a slow, steady climb up, but we have finally reached that. So if you happen to watch any of my YouTube content or absorb any of my content or help make that possible, I really genuinely appreciate it. It's not an easy task, especially when you're not super popular like myself. So to build a good quality, genuine following and people that enjoy my educational-based content, I truly appreciate it. Now, to move on to today's episode here, we're going to go with the big three and why the squat, bench press, and deadlift still rule and why these are three exercises that still should always be in your training program to some degree, right? So regardless of whether you're talking about powerlifting, sports performance, general health and fitness, you're trying to build some muscle, even hypertrophy training, the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift are usually where you start at some point in your training career. And I do think that should be the case. And I think they will always rule in terms of being a good quality place to start your training program. So some things that we are going to discuss today, to be very clear here, is that we're going to talk about the movements, okay? So if you are a beginner to intermediate, this is going to be a great introduction for you. If you are more of that advanced type person, some of this might be repetitive for you, but my goal is still to make sure that everybody takes something away from all of my educational content that I do, but more importantly, that even advanced people can take something away that you can apply. Now, maybe not today, but maybe in the future, or if you happen to be hitting a snag in your training or your programming, you're going to be able to find a way to be able to break through something. Now, if you don't know, I've also competed in powerlifting myself and had for a very long time. While I no longer compete to the level that I used to, it's been several years since I've competed, that powerlifting still holds a dear place in my heart. I've done basically everything you can think of in the sport of powerlifting, from breaking records, competing at the biggest meets, getting sponsorships, being invited to Westside, creating content, right? Judging meets, setting up for meets, running tables, doing volunteer work. You know, I have done it all in terms of the sport. So I have a very good understanding of kind of what it takes. But from my training perspective, most certainly I do as well, especially from like the technical aspect, especially going and training at Westside and training with Dave Tate and the Elite FTS team. I do feel that over my number of years of doing those lifts and working with dozens and dozens of people at Learn to Train seminars and what have you, that I've been able to pass that on to other people as well in every high degree. So in today's episode, yes, we'll talk about some technical things here and there very briefly, but the goal is not to break down the minutiae of each lift, but the benefits that each lift can provide from a programming and training standpoint and how you can manipulate those lifts in what you're trying to do. You are looking for the minutiae, though, of the technical aspect of the back, the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift help your powerlifting training. If you are listening to this on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or wherever you enjoy your podcast, go over to my YouTube channel and you'll get a lot more detailed information from a coaching cue perspective. Otherwise, what you're listening to right now will certainly cover all that. So I just want to be very clear what you will and won't get out of today's podcast. So very quickly, you know, what are the big three? Obviously, they're the back squat, the bench press, and the deadlift. They have their origins from powerlifting. And when we talk about the deadlift in this case, for all intents and purposes of the rest of this podcast, from a powerlifting perspective, it can be conventional or sumo. most people, when they get introduced to the deadlift, are taught conventional. However, I do believe my own biases that most people should learn sumo first because it's so much more technical and it can teach you how to set up for pulls better in the long run. I think it's easier to transfer it over into your conventional, where if your conventional gets ugly early, it takes a lot of work to take some steps backward to improve that. And then, as I mentioned, they obviously have the powerlifting origins as well. And for those that either are not aware, that powerlifting basically means you're going to do 3 squats, 3 bench presses, and 3 deadlifts. The best successful of each one of those lifts, they're always all done in that order, are then added together to give you a total, and you're ultimately judged on your total. You're not judged on, oh, I had the best squat or I had the best bench press. And while that can be beneficial, at the end of the day, it's having the biggest total, being the most well-rounded at all three. Now, from a programming perspective, and we're talking about here today, from beginners to elite athletes, that part doesn't matter so much. You obviously don't have to always perform them in that manner either. And those exact exercises, we're going to talk about that as well. But understanding that those three big movement patterns are a good place to create your programming from and be able to design some good quality training. And obviously, if you are not aware, that these are clearly multi-joint exercises, right? So that you're going to, the muscles that we're using are crossing multiple joints. We're going to have to use multiple joints to be able to move the weight. That makes them great from a compound lift perspective, making multiple muscle groups work together, being more neurologically effective. We take our example like a leg curl and we're laying down our belly and we curl our leg up. Not exactly the most ideal way to build our hamstrings. Now, certainly we can get stronger, but if we do a multi-joint movement, like a deadlift or a squat, chances are we're going to move more total weight and stimulate more total muscle growth throughout the whole pattern. Also, with the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift, they will be quote-unquote functional movement patterns, upper body pushing, hinging, and squatting. Really, as I always say, is functional to what? It's basically functional to being able to provide you movement patterns that you're going to use in your everyday life, right? So if you're squatting down to a chair or a toilet, or you're bending over to pick something up or pick up your kid or pick up an object, right? Something you're going to do, or if you're going to push yourself off the ground like a push-up, you know, the bench press can then come in play. We kind of already talked about the multi-joint piece and how that can maximize the muscle recruitment. So, you know, if you are short on time or if getting to the gym is not always the easiest thing for you, by having big quality multi-joint movements in your program, chances are you're going to get results quicker and you're going to be more time efficient. And as somebody that's clearly always strapped for time, things that I do, that can be a very good thing. The other one's going to be that you're going to get the hormonal response benefits from big quality exercises. So when we're talking about the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift, we do know that you're going to be able to produce more testosterone, more growth hormone because of the loads that you're placing on the body. But also understand there's hormonal responses and a negative aspect, and that cortisol can rise as well. So that's not initially a benefit because it's going to kind of wear you down a little bit, but you've got to break yourself down to build yourself up to some degree. So just understand that that's also a piece of the puzzle and part of the game. So we're talking about some like real world applications. Why do these matter outside of the gym? Going back to that quote unquote functional piece, squatting is going to be very similar to standing up and sitting down and even picking up children or picking up objects. Watch my son do this almost every single day. His squat technique is perfect right now, being 1 year old, squatting down to pick up his favorite toy. Now with the bench press, clearly pushing things, like you got to push your car down the road when it breaks down, or you're going to push like a lawnmower or get up from the ground. That's going to have that pushing base pattern. And then the deadlift, lifting up objects from the ground. If I go to pick my kid up, that's going to be more of a deadlift. Or I pick up a bag of mulch, right? Or a bag of sand, doing some yard work. That's also going to be beneficial as well. Just understand that for the average person, they do have real world applications. All right. So first we're going to start off with the squat. Understanding that this is quote unquote the lower body king of exercises. That's what you will commonly hear it called. What makes it earn that moniker, earn that name? So first thing I want to discuss is that your primary muscles used when you squat are going to be your quads, your glutes, your hamstrings, and your midsection. That's what's going to be the prime mover of getting the weights move from point A to point B. But your secondary musculatures are also going to be your calf musculature, your upper back, and your shoulders. Those are going to be more from a stabilizing perspective, more so than anything else, or from a postural perspective. Not necessarily that you're going to build muscle with them, but they are going to be recruited in some capacity. I would argue that the tighter that you are from your feet, your back, your shoulders, and even your midsection, the more weight you're going to move. So that's why they are more of a secondary. And then also the squat is usually just considered like the most natural human movement, right? If we look in all different types of places in the world, people are squatting and doing things, and people will do their jobs in that deep squat position. So just understand it's a very natural human position to be in. We're just going to be obviously increasing that difficulty with load. General benefits of doing the squat, obviously you're added a lot of leg strength and size from the waist down for sure. Everything's going to get stronger and bigger. You're clearly going to improve your trunk stability. If you squat well, and do it consistently with full ranges of motion you have access to, and you really focus on it, even from a warm perspective, it can improve your hip mobility. You're going to talk about athletic performance transference, being able to jump off two legs. Many, many sports require you to be able to jump or do things off of two legs. That's a great transfer. Even if it's a single leg sport, there's still going to be transfer there, right? You're going to have to focus on that quote unquote deep knee bend. The squat works on that. And then really for all these exercises, I could have just put that more towards the beginning, but here in my notes, I also put about the added bone density improvements that you're going to get from squatting, especially when we talk about the older populations. Getting them load on their body and performing those exercises can be great for improving their health. Common squat myths. So these are things that I kind of thought up that I commonly hear of why people don't like the squat or why you shouldn't squat, or if you go to like a medical professional, things you're likely to hear. You're probably going to hear, quote unquote, squats are bad for your knees. I'm going to actually argue they're relatively protective on your knees when they're done correctly and you do them consistently in the ranges of motion that you have. Even with lighter weights, it's one of those things, if you don't use it, you lose it, right? So it's usually when you start shortchanging your squats and you have underdeveloped glutes and hamstrings, you constantly sit in a chair and you never get in a deep knee bend position, it's probably when your knees are really going to hate you, especially from a tendinopathy perspective. You also hear some people say that you always have to squat ass to grass. That's not clearly true. Your squat depth should always depend upon the mobility that you currently have and also the goals, right? So we talk about powerlifting in this perspective. Clearly, there's no need to squat below 90 degrees because that's what the sport demands. Now, will there be long-term consequences from that? Very likely there could be, right? So, you know, I'm not going to tell you you have to bury your squats or your butts on the ground every single time, especially from a powerlifting perspective. However, doing some light weights or even like goblet position work where you do squat as low as you possibly can just to be able to train those ranges of motion and keep your hips and mobility feeling good, I think is not a bad idea, especially from a warm-up perspective. But if we're talking about this from like an athletic performance perspective, we do know that squatting at certain joint angles will build performance at certain squat angles. So the joint angle piece is incredibly important if you're trying to attack that aspect, right? So not every athlete has to squat ass to grass. I do think they should be able to have a good squat pattern and be well below 90 degrees pretty comfortably, but you can clearly attack certain joint angles off of pins and boxes, seasonality, right? As long as it aligns with your goals and the training means that you're after. And then clearly, obviously, we're talking about older populations or younger populations, you build them into movement patterns over time. They are not clearly always, right? When I take a 75-year-old woman and squat her ass to grass, I'm probably going to start with some kind of box squat variation and focus on trying to improve her squat pattern first. And if we can find that we can take away that box, maybe give her some assistance with like a TRX strap or whatever and work on improving that range of motion, then we can get there over time. But it all depends on your starting point and, again, the person that's going to be in front of you or where you currently are if you happen to be using this for your own benefits. Another one would be the Smith machine. Squats are just as good as a regular barbell back squat. We know that's not the case as well. First of all, it's just a completely different movement pattern, right? If you have ever seen a Smith machine squat, you will notice that, hey, that is not the same as a regular squat, right? So just make sure you understand that portion of it, and then it can kind of go from there. So like, I'm not going to say you shouldn't use Smith machine at all, but if you're trying to improve hypertrophy and you're able to keep more time under tension and focus on particular aspects of that movement pattern to help grow hypertrophy, that's one thing. But I understand that's not going to have the same carryover as doing a big, heavy back squat like in powerlifting or from my athletic performance standpoint. So again, as always, it always depends, but those are just some of the common myths that you're likely hear when it comes to the squat. Squat variations that you can find one that works best for you, or if we are programming or what have you. These are just some ones that I came up with. I'm sure there are plenty more, but clearly you're going to have your normal back squat, and then you got your bar positions from that. You have a high bar or a low bar, high bar that being more about the traps, low bar being more on the rear delts. You're going to have your front squat. You're going to have a goblet squat. You're going to be able to have a box squat, a landmine squat, able to do a double kettlebell squat. Obviously, you can any kind of safety bar or specialty bar variations there. So specialty bar, cambered bar, you know, bands, chains, all of those are also in the mix as well. So really, as long as you're hitting that pattern in some degree in your programming, you're going to be good. But depending upon your level and your goals and the person in front of you and what you need, we'll kind of let you pick the variation, and you can adjust those variations as needed throughout the year or throughout the seasons of someone's training as they're progressing, right? So when I look at these exercises, I see myself programming these exercises all the time for different people. So the bench press, it's your quote-unquote upper body squat is what some people will call it, or your upper body foundational based exercise. And what it primarily focuses on is clearly your chest, shoulders, and your triceps, giving you that nice big upper body look. Obviously, supporting musculature as well are going to be your lats, your legs for your stability, staying strong on the bench, and then your trunk and your midsection, being able to transfer that weight up into the barbell anytime we go to do something. It's also got very measurable progress. So the one thing I do like about the bench press is that for most people, it's very easy to tell whether you're getting stronger, because you are going to be able to touch your chest every single rep. And as long as you're keeping your butt down on the bench press and you're locking the rep out, it's pretty clear day or night whether you're actually getting a good quality rep or not, right? So the squat, your depth can be pretty variable. And, you know, as long as you're around that 90 degree range, it's pretty good. But the way that you would basically find a squat variation similar to this would be like doing a box squat to the same height all the time. But bench press, it's pretty easy to monitor that progress for just about anybody because of the natural touching point of the chest for the exercise. Benefits of the bench press, clearly it's going to help you develop your upper body strength and size, especially from a pressing perspective. It's going to help put on a good amount of meat upstairs, which is great because the bench press, unlike other pressing variations, is going to let you handle the most amount of load, right? Compared to the overhead press or the incline press, you're going to be able to do much more weight than you can there. It's going to be great for adding muscle. I would also argue, too, that if you know how to bench press and bench press well, it can improve your shoulder stability and learning how to be tight and use your lats, engage, pull your shoulder blades down and together, meet the bar, right? All that's going to do is stabilize that shoulder joint and teach you how to do that. Now, there are long-term pitfalls as well, is that pinning your shoulder blade against your back and a bench together is going to cause it to be immobilized. So there could be some negative repercussions there as well. So again, don't think that it's always going to be great for your shoulders, because it's not, but learning how to bench press well can make sure that your shoulders stay happy for a long, long time if you consistently do it correctly. And then obviously it's going to have the confidence builder for both guys and girls, especially guys. Usually the first thing that you think about is, what do I bench press? Or you think back to the first time that you walk into a gym, or have walked into a gym, you want to be able to bench press because it's going to put upper body size on you, right? It's going to build the confidence. So we do know that it's really great for building confidence in athletes as their bench press goes up. Even if there's not much, a lot of transference over to sport, we do know that it helps build confidence and also helps build confidence in beginners. Again, when you hit that one plate, two plate, three plate milestones, that gets some good quality momentum going as well. But let's talk about some issues with the bench press. The first one that comes to my mind is people always ask, how much do you bench? People really focus on what you bench press to validate your strength as an individual, or your experience as a trainer, or experience as a coach, or as a powerlifter. And quite honestly, it'd be better off if you probably ask somebody what they squat or they deadlift. Everybody goes in the gym and bench presses. You always hear stories of people saying, oh, I used to bench press 4 or 5 in high school, yada, yada, yada. To me, I think it's not really that important to see how you measure up. Also, to consider, if you talk to a powerlifter, they're going to give you their powerlifting number. If you talk to somebody that doesn't powerlift, they're going to give you probably a number that they like heaved off their chest, their butt was off the bench, right? It was an ugly ass looking rep. So there's not even really a good way to like merit what you're competing against anyways. And I also think it's just stupid. It's also egotistical, which segues me into that second one, is that there's a lot of ego lifting in the bench press, right? Going back to the bench, or your butt coming off the bench and bouncing off your chest and doing it with your friends, right? usually a lot of times you get some really crappy reps. You're not getting anything from those actual repetitions that's going to do anything to improve building muscle, building strength, improving performance. So throw your ego out the side, do the reps correctly, use a spotter, do all the safety things, have your safeties up, all that kind of stuff. You also want to make sure, again, to kind of naturally segue into this, but you're using good technique before you crank the weight too much. So many people don't know how to truly bench press. This is where I think powerlifters are great. They can really teach you to optimize leverages to be able to press the most amount of weight. And then long term, that can let you lift the most amount of weight and build the most muscle and be a better athlete or be a better version of yourself, or like I said, build more mass if you haven't been just a general trainee, right? The best thing you want to do is backtrack and try to fix errors and then have to take weight off the bar on your bench press to be able to go forward. So learning how to bench press correctly early on, almost everybody I've ever talked to wishes they would have really found somebody to truly help them how to bench press when they were young. Because again, usually you got to deconstruct this lift more so than any of the other ones in terms of technique. And then train to the full range of motion as much as you possibly can when you're doing the exercises, because it's not going to have a huge range of motion to begin with. But if you're constantly shortchanging reps, that's not going to be ideal for your shoulder. It's not going to build enough muscle. When you do have to touch your chest, you're not going to be strong there. So I think doing different ranges of motion from a training perspective is great. But when you're a beginner to intermediate, full ranges of motion with your bench press and understanding pauses for power lifter is incredibly important. So don't skim that portion of it. Variations of the bench press that I think are fantastic that I use myself, that are still in that same pressing pattern. Obviously, you're going to have your regular bench press with different grips. You're going to have your incline bench press. I did the incline in here rather than the, you know, tagging that in an overhead press because it is going to be a little more chest related. So, you know, you can certainly use the incline bench. Dumbbell variations, floor press, using specialty bars like Swiss bars and cambered bars, using boards, bands, chains, reverse bands, right? Spoto press, Larson, things that are going to manipulate your feet and or your hands, right, are all viable things that you can do. And just like with the squat, finding variations that work well for you is what's going to be important. For some people also, that might be like a push-up, right? That's still a pressing variation, even though it's not a bench press. I bias us towards the bench press, but even the push-up is going to build that pattern over the long run. So again, using the right tool for the right person and the right goals is ideally what you want to do. Now, when it comes to deadlift, to me, the deadlift is the ultimate strength test. Out of the three, it's the one exercise that I feel that you kind of have some God-given talent to, in particular that some people can just walk up and deadlift a lot of weight with like minimal training, right? You see people, they learn to deadlift initially and they're deadlifting 315 or 405 and it's like it's nothing for them. And then you have people that struggle to get to those numbers. So Louis Simmons was very big on that as well, is that usually the deadlift is one of those things where a lot of people just naturally have it and you try to get better at it. And there's other people that constantly suck at it. You got to work to get better at it. And that was one of those people for sure that was just never good at it. And some of that's leverages and some of that's just the way that your body is built from those leverages. And then obviously that's going to change how you want to train for the exercise, right? If you're naturally good at something, you love training. If you're naturally bad at it, you want to try to avoid it. The deadlift is one of those exercises that people usually like to try to avoid, especially if they're not good at it or they have that fear of low back issues, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. So it's clearly a full body exercise. For most people, it's going to be the weight that you can lift the most with. You'll find some people that can squat more than they deadlift, but not super common. Usually you're going to deadlift more than you can squat. There's a normal quote-unquote functional movement pattern, picking up heavy shit off the ground and having to move it somewhere. Remember, we're not moving the deadlift, but you get the idea. We are having to pick a heavy object off the ground. Chances are you're going to have to do that at some point in your life. And then there's going to be that functional strength transfer from an athletic perspective. If you do like combat sports or something like that, it's going to be much more relatable to some sporting endeavors than some other exercises like the bench press. So when it comes to deadlift from a muscle perspective, clearly, it's very posterior chain dominant. Hamstrings, glutes, and erectors get fried. I think everybody can pretty much agree that your day after your heaviest deadlift is always really, really tough to recover from. And in particular, those muscles right there, what's taking the big grunt of that. There is some theory that some of that soreness and fatigue comes from when the erectors are there, and they're obviously touching the or attaching on the spine, and that has some negative effects to the actual nerves and spinal cord. I don't know how true that is, but you will hear that from time to time. But also it's just a very hard nervous system based exercise. And then your upper body is also going to feel it in the traps, lats, rhomboids, and forearms after hard deadlift days as well. And then clearly you're going to get your normal trunk stability out of trying to maintain and fight that position throughout the whole exercise. The benefits of the exercise of why everybody should do some kind of deadlifting pattern, even if you feel that you've had low back issues in the past, you will probably find that the deadlift can help you feel better. In particular, you're going to find that you're going to get total body strength from head to toe. It's going to help improve your posture for the most part because you're working that posterior chain, and so many people are posterior chain deficient in terms of being strong and resilient there, that by bringing out those muscles through the deadlift, they'll find that their posture naturally kind of improves. Clearly going to improve your grip strength, have to hold on to heavy stuff. Well, it doesn't seem like much for the average person. When you are talking about elderly populations, grip is incredibly important because they don't have a whole lot of strength to begin with. So if we can do anything that improves what they use their hands for as much as possible, and it's very tied closely to when your grip improves, that you're going to find that your lifespan usually is longer. Okay. Can't guarantee that, but there's a pretty good correlation there. And then with the deadlift as well, it's going to build mental toughness. There's nothing worse than having to try to go pick up a heavy deadlift that you've never touched before, right? You have to turn it on both mentally, physically, get the tunes going, get everything geared up to go to deadlift those really heavy weights. And the deadlift is the best for that. If you're looking at improving mental toughness, the deadlift's going to have it. And I think also, too, you'll never find anybody that is a great deadlifter that's not mentally strong. Because when you talk about people having to pick up 600, 700, 800, 900 pounds, you cannot be mentally weak to do that, right? You got to be a little cuckoo upstairs. So I think mental toughness is a huge benefit of deadlifting consistently. And then as I kind of talked about too, if you do the deadlift correctly, it can help reduce your likelihood of getting hurt from a lower body perspective or a low back perspective, because you're going to be training the muscles in the correct ideal positions. And then when you go to actually pick stuff up, you're going to use that movement pattern and you're got the tissues tolerated and used to that load and used to that movement pattern. Where if you don't do that, and then you do go to pick up something heavy, say that 50 pound bag of mulch, and you've not deadlifted anything or 50 pounds in 10 years, your chances of getting hurt are probably much higher than somebody that goes to the gym and trap bar deadlifts is 225 on a pretty consistent basis, right? So something to consider. The deadlift variations that you can consider here, again, not all of them here, but you have different options for different goals. You're going to have your conventional, your sumos, I kind of talked about very early on in this episode. You're going to have your RDL and your stiff leg deadlifts. Again, while they are not actually truly deadlifts in the sense, they are a variation of the deadlift. They are a heavy hinge pattern. You're going to have your trap bar. You're going to have rack pulls, block pulls, adding bands, chains, Boris pulls, chair deadlifts, right? Dumbbell RDLs. Those are all going to be great hinging variations that you can use that are going to replicate your deadlift and or build your deadlift and build that hinge pattern. For very, very beginners, you can even tap into things like pull-throughs and glute bridges. However, I try to stick with more true, what I would call deadlift-based variations. Now, when it comes to safety and precautions, because it's probably the one exercise out of the three here that people say, oh, this is for sure, I'm not going to do it. The risk is not worth the reward. It's going to hurt your low back, yada, yada, yada. When it comes to the deadlift, the first thing is taking precautions, doing what you need to do in the first place. The first is just focusing on technique and getting that down right and early. You take care of your technique from an early get-go, focus on a relatively neutral position, using your legs to create a big push, regardless, sumo, conventional, trap bar, doesn't matter, and you're breathing and bracing, you're going to probably be in a much better spot than those that aren't doing that. Using general progressive overload as well. And I'm not talking about just a standard like Western periodization progressive overload. I'm talking about just slowly building up over time, right? You don't have to have every single session be a max out day. You can start submaximally and build into it, especially early on. And then you chip away at things slowly over time. When it comes to the deadlift, I'm always a big believer is you just take a 5 pound PR and move on, especially on your heavy days. If you can get a 5 pound PR, especially once you get really strong, every couple of months, right? Every 3 to 6 months, it doesn't seem like a whole lot, but you're not making PR attempts that frequently. So if you know that you can just take that 5 pound PR and it feels good, it may have been hard, sure, but you're like, man, I felt pretty good. You're one, you're not going to wear yourself out, but you also am building progressively over time. And that just goes with all your supplemental movements as well, right? You just progressively build them. You don't try to burn yourself out too quickly. If you need to, use a belt. There's nothing wrong with using a belt. It's going to be great for keeping your back feeling good if you use the belt correctly, right? So, I mean, you can't just put the belt on it automatically fix everything. But if you do use a belt correctly, it's going to decrease your likelihood of getting injured because of how you're going to build intra-abdominal pressure from a 360-degree perspective around your midsection. So make sure if you are going to use a belt, one, you know how to use it and use it correctly, and that if you do use it consistently once you get to certain loads. I don't think that you have to necessarily put it on for the lightest weights, but I think once you hit that 60 to 70% range, you just start using it if you're going to use it. If you're not going to use one, then you just get in the habit of not using one and you kind of go with that way. So I'm, again, I'm not biased towards whether you do or don't. I think from a powerlifting perspective, science says that you're going to lift more weight with it. So you probably should use it. But other than that, it's up to you. Just if you do use it correctly. Then you're going to have the recovery considerations as well for the deadlift. Again, it is very nervous system heavy. So just make sure that you keep that in mind. You're not going to have quite as much frequency with the deadlift as you are the other exercises that we've kind of talked about here. So let's talk about putting all three together. Why do we use all three when it comes from a training perspective and look at these big, powerful movements in our programming? So I think one is that the three together in a training program give you pretty well balanced development from head to toe, right? From a lower body perspective, from an upper body perspective, from a posterior chain, from an anterior chain, from a midsection perspective, from a performance perspective, you just get a balanced development of an individual with three exercises, which again is going to give you a high return on investment on your training time, regardless of what your goals are. The strength carries over between the lifts as well. So like your squat can help your deadlift, right? And your pull-ups can help your deadlift, and your lunges can help your squat, and your push-ups, your bench press can help your push-ups, right? There's going to be a lot of strength carryover between a lot of these things. If you use these three, they're going to carry over to your other lifts. They might also intertwine with it. They're also going to carry over to other athletic endeavors, right? So you might squat heavy to help your lower body to jump higher, but at the end of the day, you know, it's also going to help you do other things in life later on. So there's just a good carryover, and we kind of talked about balanced development, but the carryover that you get from these three exercises can go to the other exercises that you're also doing into the gym and vice versa. You're going to get comprehensive muscle activation. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you are going to be activated pretty much from head to toe in all three of these lifts, right? You have to be fully mentally and physically engaged from grabbing the bar and having it on your back, or picking it up off the ground, rooting into the floor. Full body stability and rigidity required for these lifts. And that's great for long-term health and performance. From a weakness perspective, they also address common weaknesses for people, the squat and the deadlift in particular, because they're going to require you to develop a posterior chain. They're going to require you to squat to depth. They're going to require you to do hard exercises. That's going to build your weaknesses up that you probably have. The bench press, maybe not so much, but I would argue that if you focus on like a close grip or you learn to bench press correctly, it is going to help you address some of the weaknesses that you might have there. So when it comes to programming the big three, let's kind of talk about some frequency, some beginner versus advanced things, some periodization basics, and the recovery between the sessions. The first one's going to be frequency recommendations. Now, this is going to depend upon whether you're a beginner, advanced, or intermediate, right? So usually my suggestion is the less training time that you have, the less frequency you want, because you're going to make progress doing about anything. So you want to pick the least effective dose that you can. For most people, that's going to have a squat day, a bench press day, a deadlift day. Maybe you haven't had a fourth day, it can be an auxiliary day. But if you do those three things, do them each once a week, early on in your training, you're going to make progress. If you're working with beginner-based older populations or youth athlete populations, again, doing each lift once a week is probably going to fit the bill nicely for what you want. Now, once we start getting to power lifters, intermediate to advanced populations, that begins to change. I still think for many advanced athletes, if they bench press once or twice a week, squat once or twice a week, and deadlift once a week. That's more than enough than what they're going to need. Even in all my internships and things I've done with collegiate and professional athletes, what I've seen is that usually they're only going to squat, bench press, and deadlift once a week. Some of them may not even deadlift. Again, they kind of go with the clean. But I do think a deadlift variation is still somewhat important, especially at the collegiate level. It's just finding the right variation, right? But again, for those populations, training's a means to an end. So one day a week will probably work for a lot of them. Now it's the power lifters, the strongmen, the strength sport athletes to where the frequency begins to increase over time. The more advanced that you get, you're going to need to touch these lifts more frequently. Sweet spot for most people, in my opinion, is that the squat's going to be about twice a week, bench press is going to be about twice a week, and deadlift's going to be about once a week. And then you can increase those as you need to push a particular lift and you're struggling to make progress, right? I think you should probably never, ever deadlift more than twice a week. I've never seen anybody really make progress, real true progress, doing a deadlift three times a week. I don't think that you're going to be able to recover from it well enough or train them hard enough to elicit a training stimulus long-term. So that's just my opinion. But really, 2 to 3 days a week on the squat and the bench press are probably also the sweet spot. Periodization basics. I'm not going to go into depth and too much of the periodization side, but really what you want to do is just make sure that whatever you're doing, whether it be undulating, block, current-based training, or just regular linear periodization, that you're kind of following the T to what those programming means are used for, and really understanding that the long haul with these exercises is looking at the long-term play, right? You don't have to go for a PR all the time. You're going to adjust your frequency, your volume, and your intensity based upon the time of year if you're an athlete. If you're a power lifter, same thing though. You know, if you're trying to get stronger for a meet, then you need to push things a little bit more. And if it's not time to get ready for a meet, don't worry about pushing things too much, too fast, too hard. There's always going to be another day and you just want to chip away at good days. So the programming and periodization perspective, I have videos particular on just each programming style. So I would watch those and that'll probably give you all the information you need to know from a periodization side, because really there's nothing special about them outside of their frequency. Periodization is periodization when it comes to it at the end of the day. And then the recovery between sessions kind of goes back to the frequency of just making sure that you want to make sure between each training session you're able to recover, but also recovering from week to week and month to month. That's where the frequency matters, because if you're not able to recover consistently, then you're going to dig yourself a ditch. So finding a structure that lets you teeter with that line of making progress and digging a ditch, and you want to run out of caution of making progress. I always tell people it's easier to add in another day of squatting or benching or deadlifting, but it's always difficult to take one away. So something worth keeping in mind. Common programming mistakes. So what I would avoid if I were you, always doing all three every session. You don't want to squat, bench press, and deadlift every single workout every time you hit the gym. Regardless what your training goal is, I think if you're a powerlifter, an SPD goal is fantastic. I think it's a great idea. I think if you're somebody that's incredibly short on time, you're trying to get one day of training in some place in another week, then yeah, doing a squat variation, a bench variation, deadlift variation, and then one or two auxiliaries at the absolute most and getting out is a great way to get something done in 45 to 60 minutes. But doing that every single workout is going to be difficult to be able to recover from. So just understand that. Doing one to two each workout is probably the sweet spot. Another mistake is neglecting your accessory work altogether. So just living on these three exercises and not doing anything else, right? Accessory exercises are great for creating balance, building muscle, improving weak points, keeping joints healthy. While the big three are fantastic for building muscle and strength, they are clearly they clearly miss out on frontal plane. Right? They're very sagittal plane heavy, and that's great for moving the amount of load. That's not great for long-term health. So make sure you're doing something to kind of move in all three planes from a triplanar perspective, not just a sagittal plane. And for those of you listening that don't know the sagittal plane, that's just moving up and down frontal plane. I mean, doing things side to side, and the transverse plane, the third plane, would be doing something that's going to require rotation. And that usually means your body's going to feel a lot better if you do all three of those. And if you constantly just do things moving up and down, and squat, bench press, and deadlift, usually long-term, that is your joints kind of feeling it, which also leads me to don't ignore your mobility work. If you need to improve your mobility, definitely do it. I'm somebody that did not do this very early on, which I would have So just make sure you stay up on it. It doesn't have to be a lot either. If you are feeling good right now, just find one or two things that's going to prepare you for your first exercise. If you're squatting first for the day, find something that's going to work on improving or maintaining your hip mobility and your trunk stiffness or your trunk rigidity, and then move on, right? Or your ankle mobility and move on. Find one thing that you can improve upon. Same with your bench press. Find something that's going to improve your thoracic rotation or extension or your glenohumeral rotation of some perspective, right? Something like that. And same thing with your deadlift. Just find one thing that you can work to improve upon, get a good general warm-up, and move on. And it will help you if you are feeling good. Now, obviously, you're banged up like me, then you might find two or three things to try to work on to really make sure you're prepared before you go to actually get underneath the barbell. I think you also want to make sure you're not rushing progression too quickly. Take things as they come. Don't force feed it. Make sure you're listening to your body, and you will make progress much faster by just being in tune with what your body is telling you and not trying to force feed yourself into these particular progressions. That's a bad thing. If you're using percentage-based programs, this could be a negative for you because it's going to constantly tell you to do something that your body may not be ready for. Now, theoretically, your body should be because you're just following the programming that says, but we all know that we're all different. So just take that into account as well. So the big three versus alternatives of the big three. So what if people say, well, what if I don't want to do the big three? What if I want to do functional training movements? Again, going back to this, functional to what? I don't think there is any true functional training movements, but I think people are thinking of using different like cable machines and sandbags and, you know, water bags and sleds and all that kind of stuff. Those are all great. You should use those in your training as much as you can. In my opinion, if you're not doing a squat press and hinge pattern or a squat bench and deadlift pattern, you're missing out on what, would, in my opinion, is probably the most functional training that you're ever going to do. Picking machine alternatives with the free weights. Again, if you're after hypertrophy, I think that's great. But when we talk about improving movement patterns, feeling good, improving performance, just doing machines and not the actual quote-unquote big three are usually not going to yield the dividends. Again, if you're a bodybuilder, then maybe, but other outside of that particular population, I think finding a squat, a bench press, and deadlift variation that fit you are going to be the better alternatives for the long term. Doing just bodyweight exercises, for most people, there's not going to be enough stimulus there to be able to see the progress that you want. Again, nothing wrong with bodyweight exercise. I think they're great if you're training from home or you're doing something on the go and you're trying to stay active. That's great, but again, not going to replace squatting heavy, bench pressing heavy, and deadlifting heavy. By heavy, I just mean heavy for you, right? Heavy for my 60-some-year-old personal training client is different for what's heavy for you. So just make sure that we're on the same page there. And then what about sports-specific training? Again, all quality sports training should be designed and derived around these three movement patterns being involved in some capacity. Again, doesn't mean it's a conventional deadlift, doesn't have to be run max, then you don't have to do complete conjugate stuff or powerlifting stuff, but you should have a squat pattern, a press pattern, and a hinge pattern to be able to optimize the performance of every athlete. But also, more importantly for that population, training is a means to an end, so all training is GPP. So if you're picking big quality exercises like this, you should see a higher return on investment from your time, which is really kind of the name of the game when it comes to training athletes. So for the big three, we want to make sure that we're using progressive overload pretty consistently. By progressive overload, I mean just trying to constantly add weight over time. It's very easy to do. You just add more weight on the bar, right? You don't have to think about things too crazy, have any kind of spreadsheet or whatever. You just, as long as the weight is turning in the right direction on those main lifts, you're going to see great progress. And whatever your main lifts might be, it may not be the back squat, bench press, deadlift. It may be the safety bar. It could be the Swiss bar. It could be the hex bar. For me, for my athletes and most people, those are usually the three bars that I'm kind of going with. But whatever you're choosing to do. Again, the results are measurable because you're able to just add the weight on the bar. It's very clear for most of these exercises whether you're getting better or not. They're very time efficient, kind of hammer that home the whole time throughout the episode. And they just build a solid foundation for everything else that you're going to do in and out of the weight room. So who might need the modifications? So we're talking about some injury history related considerations. So hip issues, knee issues, shoulder issues, those people are usually going to need some kind of modifications of going with either using like a box squat variation or a board press or using bands or chains for their shoulders, right? Or a deadlift, they might be using a trap bar to be able to keep it the load more centered so it's less strain on their lower back. It's also going to be a less range of motion. Certainly things to consider. Age-related modifications. this more so than anything, especially talking about youth and older populations. So we started my kids off with goblet squats and push-ups and learning how to hinge with a dumbbell or kettlebell. Same thing when it comes to older populations, you know, the 60 plus, they probably are not going to put a barbell on their back in most cases or in their hands. We can do neutral grip dumbbell pressing and push-ups and goblet squats, right? Those are all going to work just as well and build just as much muscle and strength. And it's a little bit more accessible for those populations to be able to handle. And the younger kids too, building, you know, the neuromuscular system to get ready for those bigger exercises in the future. Pick the low-hanging fruit early. Sport-specific needs, kind of talked this about a little bit earlier when it came to the squat, but like we were trying to focus on specific joint angles or, you know, like using a trap bar to improve your vertical jump, probably more so than like a conventional or a sumo, or using maybe an incline press for football because they're linemen have to push up or forward and up together more so than just forward. So you can see how you can pick some certain variations that would lend itself over to just what you likely are seeing in the sport more. And then having individual mobility limitations. So if you're not able to squat deep, again, kind of talking about you're not able to get all the way down to your chest on a push-up, or you've got shoulder issues, or you got low back issues like myself, improving mobility and training around that with usually decreased range of motion is a way to go, or finding ways to manipulate things like using a ramp for their squat allows them to get better squat mobility and hip mobility out of an exercise. So making modifications there as well. All right, so the action plan, if you're a big complete beginner or you work with complete beginners, you usually want to start off with body weight, or lightweight variations, not the barbell in particular. Focus on building the movement pattern first, instilling confidence in the exercise, and then getting up into barbell-based activities. Don't just throw somebody the barbell on day one. I almost never do, even if they tell me that experience in the weight room, because I don't know what that experience really truly means until I actually get them in the weight room and actually performing squats and a lot of times, or bench press or deadlift, whatever. So body weight and light weights is a good way to ease into that. Then you're going to work on the technique of that, get the technique down and slightly add some weight as you go. And as those things improve, then you can again get to the barbell. If you really feel that you need it or you need help, then you want to consider hiring a qualified strength and conditioning coach or personal trainer to help make sure that your technique is correct, and or schedule like a consultation call with somebody like myself and do like a Zoom call, what have you, and actually walk things through and get a one-time consult to make sure your technique is correct, or get on the level of YouTubes and find everything on there as well, and then video things and then send it to somebody that you know and trust or to a coach that you already have hired. And then finding very, very basic programs, things that are built on linear progression, that are focused on quality amount of repetitions, a decent amount of volume, right? We don't want high volume programs. We also don't want low volume programs. If you're a beginner, you need something that's middle of the road, going to give you quality reps to get the practice, but also being able to add weight and build some muscle. When it comes to the powerlifting side, I'm very pro 531, 5x5, and Juggernaut. Those are really good, easy programs to follow to see a lot of progress. You do not want to do things like Shaco and whatnot that just pound you into the ground. Those are not for people like you. Find the basic, most basic programs and run them till they're exhaustingly boring and you stop making progress, which will probably be some time. From a progression perspective, how to progress things safely. As I talked about, if you're a beginner, linear progression, just try to constantly add more weight to the bar by 5 pounds every single time you get to the gym. Doesn't matter whether you're making a ton of progress or not. Like you think you can add 10 or 20 pounds, don't do it. Go at the slowest amount and just keep building on the base that you have. I cannot stress that enough. You will be able to add 5 pounds to that bar pretty consistently once you get it down for quite some time before you actually run out of the ability to make progress. Ideally, you want to try to add weight each week. If you are a beginner, if you're more intermediate advanced, then you kind of want to look at your weights increasing over the course of the training cycle. Slowly, you're probably using RPE or percentage-based programs. So some things are somewhat controlled for you, but really you want to see that your weight is increasing from block to block, or month to month, or training cycle to training cycle. Those are the kind of things you want to make sure you're paying attention for. When it comes to deload weeks, I'm pretty anti-deload week. I've kind of talked about this in the past. I'm more of an unload week. basically listen to your body. If your body's feeling like crap, you take it down a notch and just kind of go through the motions and just work on things as you need to. Or if you're sick or if you have to travel, things pop up. Those are also your kind of natural built-in deload weeks where you just get in what you can get in. Your unload weeks, strategic unload weeks, would be if you have a new training block, for those of you that are intermediate to advanced, you naturally drop your RPE or percentage that first week. So while you have new exercises, you kind of just naturally decrease things anyways to feel them out. It's an unload. You're not trying to actually deload. You have a new stimulus, so it's not a true deload because you're probably getting more stimulus out of something else. Now, if you have some exercises that are the same, that's another thing, but just listen to your body here. And if you do take a true deload week, then you just decrease the amount of sets and reps and load that you're using, allow your body to recover, and then push back on. And then, as I said, in the day, in my opinion, you should just listen to your body. Body's telling you it's not a good day, it's not a good day. If your body's telling it's a great day, push forward. All you really need from an equipment standpoint, too, for a lot of this is usually just a barbell on a rack and some plates, and you'll be good to go. However, obviously, that's like the home gym kind of setup. If you're at a commercial gym, you're clearly going to have access to more machines, maybe some bands, maybe some blocks to pull from, right? You're going to have some different variations that you can kind of explore if you're looking to get into that more advanced aspect of it. And then clearly, if you're at a very advanced training facility like mine, you have all the bells and whistles, then clearly you can use other things to your advantage if you need to. But for most people, you just will really need the basics. And then you obviously want to make sure you're following all the safety stuff that you can, using a spotter on bench press, having your safeties up, right? Using clips when you should be using clips, that's all I'll say on there. And then, you know, making sure you use your belt if you need your belt and all that stuff, right? There's some takeaways here. Really what I want you to kind of gather that the big three are foundational for a reason. They hit a lot of muscle. They build a lot of strength. They're time efficient. You can get a lot of work done in a little bit of time, and you can see progress for a really, really long time if you really master these three exercises and master them well, or their variations if you choose to go with a variation of the main three. Each lift clearly offers its own unique benefit, but really there's pretty intertwined to providing full body balance as well. And then your technique and consistently working on them from a technical aspect will yield dividends down the road rather than just throwing the most amount of weight on that you can from day one. So because they are so technical, they are such big quality lifts, you want to weigh at them over time. You want to make sure that the slower you build into them, chances are the longer you'll be doing them, making progress with them, where if you just try to max out every week from the get-go, probably going to beat your body down. You're not going to see progress as quickly, and you're probably going to give up a lot quicker. These three lifts for sure are the long play, right? You are going to have to spend a lot of time, a lot of repetitions, and a lot of agony getting better at these exercises to truly maximize them for your performance. So what are some actionable things that you can do right now if you happen to be listening to this or watching this over on YouTube? First thing is to assess your current training. Can your training just be improved? If anything that I've talked to you about here today, talking about frequency or some programming ideas or understanding how the lifts intertwine with each other and how they can affect recovery, right? Assess your current training where you're at and see if there's some low-hanging fruit that you can immediately tweak just to kind of keep things chipping away. You can also just pick one lift to focus on, immediately improving. Find the one lift that's holding you back. What do you suck at? What can you improve upon? What resources can you go in to dive into just that lift? Is there somebody on social media? Is there a book? Is there a resource, right? Is there a consultation call you can do with somebody to maybe really nitpick down on this if you have to be more on that advanced side? If you're a beginner or intermediate, find the lift that you just suck at and increase the frequency of it just so you can get more practice with it. Doesn't mean you have to max out with it, but just add an extra day. If you really suck at deadlifting, deadlift twice a week so you can get one day to where you just work on technical practice and the other day you work at it really hard. You're going to double your bar lifts, make you better at it, right? So any of those things would all work great. You can also work on scheduling form checks and or coaching with somebody like myself or somebody else that you trust. I even do free 15-minute consultation calls. I have to do is click my Calendly link that's in my Instagram bio. So if you go to my Instagram at bsmitley, you'll find it there. I think it may even be on my website as well. I can't remember. If not, I'll try to remember to get it up on there by the time you listen to this. But you can literally schedule a free 15-minute consultation call for me. Absolutely no strings attached. And I'll help you for 15 minutes. So you can find somebody that's willing to help you out more than likely if you really do need it, even if you are on a budget. And then you can want to make sure you set realistic strength goals, right? If you know where your numbers are now and you know you want them to be, your goal should be the next 10 to 20, maybe 30 pounds at the absolute most. If you're really strong, you know, maybe you can make some of those bigger jumps if you're trying to go from like a 600 to 625 deadlifts, right? Something like that. But usually you just want to chase the next 10 to 20 pounds. If you're squatting 300, the next goal should be 315, right? The next one should be 325, then 335, 340. Right, that's what you want to aim for. You don't want to be that guy squatting 315 and say, I want to squat 405. Well, you probably do want to squat 405, but focus on 325 first. That's the hurdle. You got to make the small chips at first. You got to take that powerlifting approach to it to make progress. Don't try to bite off more than you can chew, because then it's going to seem like it's forever away. Chase the short-term goals and they'll stack up to the long-term goals, and you'll be there much quicker, I assure you. Plus, it's going to build some confidence and build positive momentum. And when it comes to getting strong, there's nothing worse than constantly trying to take the same weight over and over and over and over and missing. Sometimes you got to just take that 5-pound jump and just take it, get some positive momentum going, get things feeling good and go in the right direction. I think for me personally, in my powerlifting career, that's the best thing I ever did with on and off the platform. Training to competing was I always took the 5-pound PR. And I always feel like I made much better progress long term. I did not miss lifts very often from a competitive standpoint or from a training perspective. And that's because I always chased the 5-pound PR versus the 10 or the 20-pound PR. So something worth keeping in mind there. So that's going to wrap up all I've got here for today, for this episode for you. If you happen to take one awesome thing away, I really appreciate it. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, leave me a comment, let me know on your squat, your bench press, your deadlift, where do you need help in particular? And I'll see if I can chime in and give you some free help in the comment section. And if you've not already, make sure you hit the subscribe button where you can keep up with the podcast and all my other YouTube information more consistently. If you are listening over on Spotify and iTunes, what you can do to really help me out is just hit that 5-star button. Let me know that you like the episode, you like the podcast. That really helps the podcast get pushed out to other people, and I really appreciate it. Or you can just share this podcast with a friend, family member, somebody that needs help doing their big three exercises. Because this is a pretty beginner to intermediate based podcast. So again, I appreciate you coming on, listening to today's episode. It's good to be back. Again, leave me any feedback that you want. If there's something in particular you want me to cover on the podcast, you can let me know in the comment section on YouTube. I'd be more happy to do that for you. And I look forward to seeing you guys at the next episode.
Thanks for listening to Thirst for More Podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at The Smitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.